Foreign ministers of the BRICS group of nations have met to discuss expansion and ways to challenge U.S. dominance in the global economy. Could the bloc shift the balance of the world's trade and power? Or is it a political pipe dream? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. Foreign ministers of the BRICS nations have been meeting in Cape Town, with South Africa hosting fellow members Brazil, Russia, India, and China. The group began somewhat informally in 2006, with South Africa joining 4 years later. But in today's more polarized geopolitical world, the BRICS club has become more significant for its members. Some, like Russia, believe it presents a way to forge a new world order, one with less U.S. control. Several countries that sent diplomats to South Africa this week are keen to join the bloc. We'll discuss what's next for BRICS with our guests in a few moments, but first, this report from Michael Apple on what was on the agenda in Cape Town.
The foreign ministers of the BRICS group of nations have called for a rebalancing of the global order away from the West. They've pointed to sanctions against Russia for its invasion of Ukraine and the deepening antagonism between the U.S. and China as factors behind their thinking. Host South Africa has called for more dialogue.
We believe the world needs to talk much more.
Saying economic as well as political adjustments are needed.
We see a world which has faltered in cooperation. We're aware that developed countries have not met their commitments to the developing world and are trying consistently to shift responsibility to the global south.
BRICS countries are home to more than 3.2 billion people, around 40% of the global population. None of the bloc's members is in the G7, the group of seven advanced economies. To increase its influence, BRICS is considering bringing new members into the fold.
How are you doing?
Biologically
okay. Surviving.
Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Iran have expressed interest.
I believe the enlargement of the BRICS will be beneficial to the BRICS countries, beneficial to developing countries, and to increase the representation influence of this mechanism, and also to garner a bigger power of the BRICS to serve the interests of developed countries.
The group accounts for about one-third of global GDP. The impact of U.S. interest rate hikes on members' economies and Western sanctions on Russia have prompted discussions reducing reliance on the U.S. dollar.
We had one of the senior executives of the new development bank briefing our meeting on work that the bank has been doing, looking at the potential use of alternative currencies to the current internationally traded currencies.
The talks in Cape Town were overshadowed by questions about whether Vladimir Putin will attend the leaders' summit in August. The International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant for the Russian president, accusing him of war crimes committed in occupied Ukrainian territory. This creates a diplomatic problem for Pretoria, with Western nations saying Putin must be arrested if he lands in South Africa. Michael Apple for Inside Story.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests in Cape Town. Sanusha Naidu, a senior research fellow at the Institute for Global Dialogue, an independent foreign policy think tank. In London, Chris Wiefer, chief executive officer at Macro Advisory, a strategic consultancy that operates in the Eurasia region. And in Washington, D.C., Shirley Yu, a political economist and senior fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Shirley, let me start with you today. So foreign ministers of the BRICS group of nations are presenting themselves as an alternative to the G7, as a counterbalance to the West. Could the bloc actually shift the balance of the world's trade and power, or is this merely a political pipe dream?
I think it's entirely likely. The BRICS countries is expanding as we speak. 19 more members are looking at joining. But as it stands right now, it represents about 26% of the world's GDP on nominal terms. On PPP basis, it's already a larger economic bloc than the G7. It represents about 43% of the world's population. It is a substantial global power representing the emerging world. But they are not a rival to the G7 by all means. They are an alternative and a complement to the G7. The BRICS bloc, they trade less among themselves than they trade with the G7. And it's hard to imagine today that the BRICS bloc by themselves is going to pull the strings of the global economy without the West. But in the sense of reflecting the interests and desires of the emerging world, I think the BRICS are going to voice more strongly and creating more institutional and multilateral architecture to reflect that desires that come from this essentially 43%+ of the world's population.
Chris, we can't talk about a bloc like BRICS that Russia is a member of without bringing up the war in Ukraine. So I want to ask you, how much is the Ukraine war driving what is going on internally within BRICS right now? How much is that shaping the agenda?
I think it's been a catalyst, not necessarily the conflict itself, but just everything that has happened around the conflict, particularly the sanctions against Russia. What it's done is it has created this dialogue within BRICS of the need to kind of have a stronger voice, if you like, a lobbying power against the G7. Because a lot of the narrative that you see, for sure, of course, in the Russian media and the Chinese media and elsewhere, is about the fact that the G7 group seem to direct everything, dictate, if you like, global policy with regards to economics, with control of the IMF and the World Bank, and also on the environment, etc. And that has created a lot of resentment in the emerging world amongst BRICS. And if you like, the fact of this aggressive sanctions policy has accelerated that debate. So I think that's, you know, what we're now looking at in terms of expanding the BRICS with more countries is not itself directly a consequence of the conflict, but it is a consequence of this emerging big picture of the fact that countries feel that they need to have a stronger voice, a stronger representation in order to, you know, have their position, if you like, taken into account and not just dictated by the G7. And that's the narrative. And so the conflict has definitely accelerated that.
Sanusha, high on the agenda at this meeting of the foreign ministers of the BRICS nations is the idea of expanding BRICS membership, widening its membership. There have been at least 19 countries, including Saudi Arabia, Iran, the UAE, and Indonesia, and others that have expressed interest in joining BRICS. So I want to ask you, how likely is it that the group's membership can be expanded in the short term, and what's the prospect of BRICS growing quickly?
Good day, Mohammed. I think it's very likely that it will expand in the long term. But I think right now, the foreign minister's press briefing, as well as what was mandated from the 14th BRICS summit last year, to try and develop a framework of criteria, standards, principles around how expansion will be managed and what it will entail and who will be qualifying as part of an expanded BRICS membership is something that hasn't really been decided on at this meeting. And of course, they have until August of this year, when the BRICS summit happens in Johannesburg, to come up with a framework. So it's actually a work in progress. And I think for now, I think the expansion is really around how will it be defined in terms of the core, the nucleus of the five permanent members of the BRICS, and how that will then evolve in terms of the relationship, bringing in other members, as you mentioned, 19 countries, including Saudi Arabia. And I think they are looking towards perhaps other structures where there may be perhaps a 2 to 3 year or 4 year observer status, and they get a gradual kind of incremental approach to that expansion. I think the bigger challenge for the BRICS right now, the five countries, is not to expand too fast, because then expanding too fast also means that it may end up in a situation where the five countries may have to think about how that will impact on them as the nucleus of the BRICS. So I think these are some of the criteria that will have to be considered in terms of a model and a framework.
Shirley, another thing that's being talked about a lot right now when it comes to BRICS is the possibility of creating a new common currency for international trade as an alternative to the U.S. dollar, also as a way to avoid the impact of sanctions over the war in Ukraine. This would be known as de-dollarization. I want to ask you about how feasible this is. How easy and or difficult would it be?
It will be feasible, but yet it'll be a very difficult and complicated process. The BRICS common currency was recently proposed by Brazilian President Lula da Silva, essentially to create a currency by the BRICS bloc on top of their sovereign currency to be used for the bloc's trade. And so essentially, correctly, like what you said, Mohammed, not only does the weaponizing the dollar in terms of sanctioning Russia had sent a cautionary note to these emerging countries for potential sanctions on themselves, but also the sharply raising U.S. interest rates has made essentially all developing economies extremely vulnerable over the past year to this over-reliance on the U.S. dollar. Not only they have to almost all raise interest rates in order to maintain the stability of the exchange rate, but also they have to pay a higher interest on their dollar debt. And so all of these have called for an acceleration to seek alternatives to the over-reliance on the U.S. dollar in global trade and investment. And so BRICS common currency is going to be, as it stands right now, a currency that's backed by tangible assets. Gold has been talked about. Other precious metals, including rare earths, interest-paying assets. And so the whole concept is also very different from the current understanding of the U.S. dollar being the global reserve currency, which is backed essentially by the faith and credit of the U.S. Sovereign capacity. And so the whole design, like other speakers have talked about, takes time to be culminated, in terms of institutional building. There are hard elements and soft elements, economic stability, but also rules and norms and values that are shared by this block is going to be significant.
Chris, let me get your viewpoint on this. Trying to unite BRICS member countries fiscally, trying to create some kind of common currency as an alternative to the dollar. I mean, is that, from your point of view, practical? Is that realistic? These are economies that are very different. You have different economies. You have different interest rates. How difficult would this be?
Well, look, I think the short answer is extremely difficult and will take a very, very long time. Supporters of the idea do point out to the fact that the European Union did come together. They did create the euro. It took a long time. There were plenty of obstacles. It's a process that's still continuing, but it was done. And they used that as a model. Now, but as you say, of course, when you look at BRICS and the potential expansion, it's a much more globally spread or diverse group of countries geographically, as well as in terms of economics. So considerably more difficult. What we have seen over the last year and a half in particular, of course, is Russia doing and China both doing more bilateral trade using their own currencies. But even here, Russia, for example, is able to settle debt with the Chinese yuan. But recently, the foreign minister has been complaining that there are billions of dollars worth of Indian rupees, which is owned by Russia, which has been used to pay for imported energy, but Russia cannot get it out of India into the Russian economy to be used. So I think people had this idealistic view of creating this common currency, like, say, the euro. But in practice, over the last 6 to 9 months, the obstacles for actually getting that done have become so much clearer. So I would say actually now the mood in Moscow is that this is something that they shouldn't be pressing because it's not going to happen too easily. There are more pressing objectives, such as creating kind of trade bloc or maybe even political unit. Creating an alternative currency, as far as I can see, has actually slipped down the agenda even over the last 6 to 9 months because of the practical considerations have become more obvious.
Sanusha, I asked Chris earlier about how much...
I just have something to add there. I think there is a fundamental difference. The BRICS currency is not in the sense the same as the creation of the euro, in the sense that there is one common currency for the bloc, which will essentially strip away all the central bank independence, all the sovereign currencies by the five countries, etc. It is a common currency that is used in parallel to the sovereign currencies. And so I think talking about the EU kind of monetary union is entirely unrealistic. And I don't think that's what the BRICS are talking about right now.
Sanusha, I had asked Chris earlier. Chris, let me get back to you in just a minute. Sanusha, I had asked Chris earlier about how the war in Ukraine was impacting BRICS at this particular moment. I want to ask you about something related when it comes to all this to South Africa, because you have these allegations of Russian war crimes having been committed in Ukraine. And as a result, the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin over the allegations of these war crimes. As a member of the court, South Africa would be obliged to arrest Mr. Putin if he attended a BRICS summit scheduled for August in Johannesburg, I believe. So how much of a diplomatic nightmare is all of this for President Cyril Ramaphosa right now?
It's a serious predicament because according to our obligations under the Rome Statute, which is domesticated in our legislature, as well as our commitment and obligations under the ICC, is that we have to basically abide by that. There is this question around when does international law prevail over sovereignty? And this is the big challenge I think South Africa is facing and the predicament that the government is trying to define, because at the moment, the challenge is what are their options? If President Putin is to attend the BRICS summit, and again, there's uncertainty around that as well, but if there is to be an attendance, then of course, by all means, South Africa has to abide by its international obligations. So again, there are all of these different types of speculation that's emerging around whether South Africa may be thinking of, with media reports suggesting that South Africa may be thinking about asking China or another BRICS country that's not a member of the ICC to host the summit. But again, this will send a mixed signal to the rest of the world, particularly in the fact that this is a summit that's going to be hosted in person after the whole impact of the COVID-19. So after last year, where China hosted it online, which was the last time that the summit was hosted online was last year, this time around, it's in person. It actually raises a lot of important reputational and symbolicness of the BRICS itself as it strengthens internally. So the challenge right now is to what extent there may actually be a question that may be posed to Mr. Putin as to whether he will attend in person or nominate a representative. If I may also just try and chime in on this question of the BRICS currency and the issue around there, I think it's also very important to put on into this discussion the question of what was adopted last year at the BRICS summit in terms of BRICS Pay, a kind of interpayment settlement system in local currency. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a sense that you get when you speak to officials from the South African side in particular, but also the Sherpas that are involved in this whole preparation of the BRICS, is that there is a cautionary approach to whether you want to create a third global currency that is BRICS, a BRICS currency. I think right now the bigger challenge for the BRICS is to understand how they reduce transactional costs, and in particular, how do they reduce the kind of secondary sanctions that prevail and catch them in the sanctions around the SWIFT. Also something that is critical, because one of the challenges that the BRICS have brought up is the transactional impact that they face in terms of monetary sovereignty. And I think my colleagues are alluding to that in terms of this. So I think the real question for the summit in August would be, institutionalizing the aspects of BRICS Pay through maybe also digital currency platforms as well.
Hmm. Chris, you wanted to jump in before, so please go ahead.
Yeah, well, actually, I can broaden it out a bit and to say that the agenda to Moscow has a much greater sense of urgency on BRICS than the other countries. You could put it like said, Russia wants this to happen quickly, wants the expansion to happen quickly, and would very much like to have one currency and one system. And then that's they're talking about that. China perhaps is further behind, is a lot more patient, would certainly like this to happen, but doesn't want to push it too aggressively. And then you've got the other countries, particularly the, shall we call them, candidate countries, that want to move much more cautiously because they don't want to create a new rift with G7, with the US, or with Europe in terms of trade, because these countries' relationships are much more important. So I think, therefore, Moscow's view of BRICS could very well derail this whole kind of ambition if it chooses to be too aggressive. Putin definitely wants to go to the summit in Johannesburg. We know from Moscow sources that they're putting a lot of pressure on the government in South Africa to find a way that Putin can attend without him being arrested. For example, talk of changing the law to give sovereign heads of state immunity, etc. Putin absolutely wants to go because for this summit to be held virtually would, as from what we hear of officials in Moscow, would kind of dilute the effort to create a more powerful and more relevant BRICS. So if it were to be held online or if Putin had to send a deputy or he couldn't attend, they feel that momentum would be lost. He really wants to go to this. But as I say, I think in general, you have Russia really pushing aggressively on a number of fronts, the currency being one, on expansion as quickly as possible.
Right.
Because Moscow's agenda is differently, as you say, but because of the conflict, they want to have this as an alternative body to the G7, where Russia is a member, and to use that then as some sort of a counterbalance with the West. But I think Russia is now out of step with everybody else. Everybody else wants this to happen on a much more slow, more cautious basis than Moscow does.
Surely, we can see just by looking at this conversation thus far how much of a shadow is caused by Russia and what's going on in Ukraine, is how much that's looming over everything when it comes to BRICS. But I want to look for a moment more closely at China. And I want to ask you that, you know, when it comes to developing economies in the world, how big a factor is China currently, and how much are these economies tied to China?
China is roughly over two-thirds of the economic output among the BRICS bloc, and it certainly has a lot of economic sway in terms of trade with the developing world. But in addition to China's economic hard power, I think today it's important also to look at China's efforts in delivering this global institutional building. Bear in mind, the New Development Bank, which was formerly BRICS Bank, was set up in China and is currently headquartered in Shanghai. And so China is a quintessential component of this new emerging global architecture on a multilateral basis, and particularly not only, you know, within the BRICS bloc, but also with Africa, with ASEAN, with Latin America. And I think today, in terms of China's aspirations in developing this global multilateral architecture, we are looking at China being one of the major global economies that's on the cutting edge of launching its own sovereign digital currency. And this multilateral currency platform that will be embraced by the BRICS bloc is not just a currency. It also includes a cross-border currency clearance system as an alternative to the U.S.-led SWIFT. And that's going to be, the BRICS Pay is going to be very much backed by blockchain technology, decentralized ledger, interoperability. And so all of these technological components have been studied and carefully researched and experimented by China. And I think a lot of these experiences will be shared as this whole multilateral architecture starts to take form.
Sanusha, I want to turn again for a moment to South Africa's role in all of this. What is South Africa getting currently out of being a member of BRICS? I mean, what are the advantages of its memberships? And also, is it vulnerable to pressure from the West to turn away from Russia?
I think, you know, South Africa finds itself in these crosswinds because on the one hand, being in the BRICS also kind of elevates the agency that we've been discussing around the kind of structural constraints that the international system finds itself in, the deepening geopolitical dimensions, the inflection point, questions around global governance reform. And this has been consistent in terms of South Africa's commitment to multilateralism and also understanding how these different institutions and the global architecture needs to reform or transform in terms of recognizing emerging power blocks and emerging power centers of influence in terms of what the BRICS and perhaps other centers of influence in the global South represent. In more fundamental terms for South Africa, it's about Africa. It's about the pivot of the African continent and how much agency the African continent has. So utilizing the BRICS in that way is important. There's been a lot of debate about whether South Africa's economic transactions and benefits out of the BRICS compares to its relationship with the G7 countries, and in particular the EU and the US, particularly along the fact that these are bigger markets, that this is where our trade is much more focused and centralized, and that given the fact that we may not be getting as much transactional value from an economic perspective from the BRICS, then why are we willing to compromise our position? But I think it's much more than that. It's the intertwining of both the geopolitical and the geoeconomic. And I think for the first time, South Africa is now placed in a very invidious position because it has to test something that international law has not been able to do, and that is arrest a sitting head of state if that head of state attends the BRICS summit. And this is another kind of position and predicament that faces the South African government. I think on legislation that is...
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but we're running out of time, and I just want to ask one last question to Chris. Chris, we just have about a minute and a half left. If countries like Saudi Arabia or the UAE were to gain membership to BRICS, how does that change things for the bloc?
It changes it enormously. I think that BRICS has been regarded as kind of a fringe organization, despite the fact, of course, that China and India, the two biggest countries in the world, are in it, but still fringe and regarded as fringe by G7. But if it were to expand significantly with new countries like Saudi and Indonesia and others joining, then it would have to be taken a lot more seriously. And I think this is the whole objective. We put Russia's objective to one side, but if you like China and others, the objective is to have a kind of a more equal voice when it comes to setting the world agenda. Criticism that the US and Europe dominate big institutions like World Bank, IMF, the global climate agenda, etc. We hear these all the time. Having a bigger and more global BRICS means that the G7 countries would have to discuss these and share more with BRICS. That's the view, I think, that the supporters of a bigger BRIC now have.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Sanusha Naidu, Chris Wiefer, and Shirley Yu. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.